Hello and welcome to the Label Sessions Presents podcast. Label Sessions is the world's leading innovation expert network. In this series, you will meet some of the most interesting leaders anywhere, from across the worlds of business, design, tech, culture, and sustainability, all signed to the Label Sessions roster. To find out more about our work, helping brands and institutions around the world take on their big challenges for the future, head to labelsessions.com to find out more. For now, enjoy the podcast.
Thank you so much, Gareth, for taking time to sit down and talk to me. It's really great to have you on the podcast. We obviously know you as someone who has led climate change inside a big bank, inside big consultancy companies, and now in a startup focused on climate change. But I'd love to hear those words from you. Could you give a quick intro about yourself?
I have very definitely what you would consider had a squiggly career to end up doing what I'm doing right now. Starting off in pharmaceuticals and then trained as a stockbroker. And found myself running the digital team very quickly, and then almost from there into client for sort of 14, 15 years, running big digital functions for some of the kind of big FS brands in the UK, so like Standard Life, Bank of Scotland, Lloyds Banking Group, and the rest. Before making the leap into consulting, I was very fortunate to be right in at the start at Deloitte Digital. Shaping the proposition and shaping what we're going to do there. And after sort of 6-7 years doing that, now find myself running a startup, which is a bit scary, but very rewarding from the perspective that, you know, you're out there trying to help save carbon, save money, educate people. So looking yourself in the mirror in the morning is a little bit easier than some of my previous roles.
That's a really good baseline to start from. So that sort of ties in quite well to what I was going to ask you first, which is, how is it that you define sort of tech sustainability in today's digital landscape?
One of the things that I talk about a lot is just this kind of lack of awareness that, you know, digital has ambitions. I think we're all very used to, you know, seeing the tailpipe of a car, or the recycling bin in the kitchen, or the emissions of a chimney stack from a factory or a power station, or whatever else, and on having a really clear understanding that that's emissions and that's bad. And I think, you know, it's once you start to explain to people, well, actually, you charge your phone, that's electricity. Electricity comes from somewhere. You stream music onto your device, and billions of streams happen every single day, and there's energy in the storage, there's energy in the transmission, there's energy in the playing of that, and it adds up quite quickly that people start to understand. And it's, you know, one of the things that really resonates with people, particularly people who've been working in digitals for as long as I have, is that we used to be super focused on what we called efficiency, because we didn't have the luxury of not being efficient, if that makes sense. Bandwidth was super low. It's probably a bit before your time, Josh, but dial-up beeps and wings it used to make. But, you know, you were in competition with other brands on who could deliver that content quickest, because if you took too long, people would go elsewhere. So your websites had to load really quickly. Your experiences, your transactions had to be done quickly, because otherwise people would get bored and go somewhere else. The, you know, changes in technology have led to amazing things like super fast broadband, super fast Wi-Fi, 5G, and quote unquote storage is cheap. And that really changed or removed some guide rails to technologists in terms of what they deliver, and very much focused on maximizing what you could get from a device. And the consequence of that has been the increase in energy usage, an increase in carbon, and can't be better defined in terms of the growth in the use of Gen AI, which is incredibly resource intensive, both in its use of electricity now, depending on what source you believe, but it's kicking around 1% of all global electricity is used to power Gen AI, or its use in terms of just general conversation. Just one conversation with ChatGPT, where you ask it something daft, will account for half a liter of water. to kill the servers. So it's hugely impactful. And we need to just be a bit more thoughtful about how we use some of these tools. So all kinds of different stats. I won't bore you with all of them, but basically technology uses electricity. Electricity is not that green. Very little green energy kicking around as yet, particularly in the technology space. We just need to be a bit more thoughtful and start to measure that impact.
Yeah, completely agree. And it's something that I admittedly was guilty of until fairly recently, is that you don't think of the footprint outside of what's sort of shown to you. You think about it, like you're saying, like the really obvious stuff, like, you know, smokestacks and factories and things like that. The thing that really opened my eyes, when it was a couple of years ago now, but it was the, like, obviously a lot of these data centers are handled by like three or four companies like Microsoft and Amazon Web Services, how they resorted to taking their data centers and moving them underwater. It's another a fascinating sort of thing, because it's a different element of cooling than an attempt to be more environmental.
Yeah, there's some fascinating business out there who are really looking at how they use the heat better. And moving it underwater one way.
It's an extravagant way.
Fantastic company. Like, they could just host in Scotland. It's really cold. Something went down. It'd be fine. Looking at alternative approaches. So there's a fantastic case study from a company called Deep Green Energy, which is really worth going to have a look at, where they use the excess heat from the servers to heat a local swimming pool. So they become a heat exchange. So excess heat over here, cold swimming pool over here, let's go heat that. Not a new idea. Used quite often, you know, obviously big move towards using heat exchange in domestic properties. And some fantastic cases that I love to talk about, where there's a cheese farmer mull which heats its swimming pool off the warmth of the cow milk it uses as a heat exchange. But it's all of these solutions are all contributing to reducing our impact. And it's great to see there's not just one solution in that space.
And that ties in quite nicely to what I was going to ask you next, which was, what is the most sort of common challenge that clients face when looking to improve sustainability?
We'll go back to probably the awareness thing. There's a whole bunch of assumptions in the technology space, quote unquote, cloud is green. If we just move to cloud, that'll save some energy. Our hyperscale told us that their energy is green, so that's fine. But actually, there's a critical relationship between the software and the hardware. And of course, you know, in most cases, and I've got some examples where it's not the case, there are, in most examples, cloud is more efficient, for sure. However, all you're doing is moving the same thing over here and reducing its impact a little bit, rather than actually looking at the source of the problem. The source of the problem is typically the software. So how you build and design your software is critical to the energy it then uses further down the line. So raising awareness of that, adding sustainability to lens in product development and app development, all the way into proposition design, you know, like thinking about how we're going to deliver the most sustainable product all the way through is super critical. So raising that awareness is hyper important for us. And that's why we built education programs around the site, so that people can share that knowledge and raise awareness. You're solving the problem long term. So there's all kinds of actions you can take in the short term to mitigate impact. But code, software, hardware, to a certain degree, all still built by us humans, you know, in most cases. And if we are not thinking about that, then we're going to, you know, even if we fix some of the problems now, we still continue to develop the way we develop today, we're just making the problem worse. So a great example, Excel. I talk about Excel a lot just because it's something we all kind of use, right? Excel's been around forever and ever and ever. You probably used it in your school. It's, you know, if you were to use Excel now and then go and show what Excel did 20 years ago, spreadsheet, you could do VBA then, you could do VBA now. It doesn't do much different now than it did 20 years ago. Could you run that same could you run Office 365 on a 20-year-old laptop? No danger. Wouldn't happen. So what's changed in the way that Excel is now created? And I'm not bad-mouthing Microsoft. It's just in general, applications now ask a lot more of the device. And is it doing so in an additive way? And it's, you know, we've all got to the point where our phone, quote-unquote, starts slowing down. Chip suddenly changed? Or is it that the software that's on it is asking more of the device? And that's it. You know, we're going to get more, we're going to get better graphics, but is that making the experience better? And I think you have to take that kind of experiential view. And if you're, you know, thinking about, you know, a website or, you know, an experience you can, you know, see, does that image need to be that high res to create the buying or shopping experience that I want? Or could it be slightly lower? And if it's slightly lower, it uses less energy to serve it, uses less energy to download it. And making some decisions like that. And we're seeing some big brands really thinking about that now, particularly when it comes to the energy space. So VW, they have their ID range, their electric cars, and on their website for the ID cars, there's a low energy mode. So you could actually change the website to reflect the fact that you're interested in sustainability, you're interested in buying an electric car. Let's make the website experience more lo-fi. And actually, huge tranches of people were choosing to do that. And actually, when you think about it from experience design thing, which clearly where most of my background is, if you're really focusing on efficiency, does the journey become simpler? Does the transaction between you and that brand become shorter and more direct because you've looked at every step and gone, does it hold this value? Is it additive? And actually, you can end up having experiences that are a little bit punchier, a little bit shorter, a little bit more focused on doing what they need to do. Does that create a better relationship between you and that brand?
Yeah, you touched on a few really interesting points there. Something that I hadn't even considered again. It was the idea that a lot of software, you know, the idea of planned obsolescence, sort of making devices worthless and then turn into e-waste is a really like obvious example. But something that I was thinking about there is the shift towards more, like I say, throw it up in the cloud, but the shift towards more cloud and subscription-based platforms and making software that should work on an older device deliberately not work on an older device just so they can extract more money out of people. I mean, I'm not trying to badmouth, I mean, to be fair, I am, but it's a little frustration of mine of like Adobe is a perfect example of software that has no reason to be purely subscription-based, but is solely just because it churns out more money when it's also not a more sustainable practice as well, because then they have control over when software can expire, essentially.
Well, in particularly in the sustainability space, if we talk about those businesses all the time, those SaaS businesses all the time, and the responsibility that we think they should have to their clients. So, from that, you know, measurement of code impact, measure sustainability impact in technology. If you build software and you have engineers, you're potentially a client for these kinds of services. So there's huge areas, there's huge tracks of industries or service lines that can never really impact that because, you know, if you're a retail business, you're using Shopify, SAP, and a whole bunch of other services that you just buy them. You don't control the impact on you. But now through regulation, we're going to start to see people being asked to to measure their scope 3 emissions. I don't want to dive too much into ESG stuff, but measure the impact of using these services on them. It shouldn't really be that difficult for SaaS businesses to do it well, measure the impact of the entire platform. Relatively simple calculation, depending on the tiers of service that they have, or you're a tier 3 client, or you transact, you know, X million lines a year or whatever it might be, and then give them a number. We're only seeing the front runners in that space really start to get into that conversation. But like talked about with some of your colleagues in the past, the biggest drivers for change have always been regulation. We're starting to see reporting regulations both in Europe in the US and expect to see something similar in the UK. There's early stages in the UK where the regulation will drive that reporting and therefore drive the need to measure and measurement usually drives action.
And again, you touched upon it a little bit there, but I'd love to hear about some more of a sort of exciting developments that you've seen in green tech and the future of sustainability or digital sustainability recently.
It's such a nascent space. It's quite, I think the exciting stuff is people talking about it, Josh. I think it's one of those areas where there's a groundswell of conversation. I was at a conference last week, an ESG innovation conference. And I suppose you sometimes feel it feels a little bit like the early stages of the web, early stages of digital. And I make a comparison between this and accessibility and other things that we used to, which changed how we did things. And I think this will eventually change how we do things. But you can often find yourself like web 101. You know, earlier in my career, I spent most of my time explaining what a website was and what an email was and why we needed to email customers to people who didn't understand it. I was just like, words. And they're like, no, it's a bit more complicated than that, you know. And it's a little bit like that now. And I think to a lot of people in the sustainability space, they're frustrated at the pace of change because of the size of the problem and because it's such a, you know, a huge boil the ocean type problem to solve, you know, 5 years to save the planet and all these kind of scary headlines can almost put people off from doing something because, well, it's, you know, what can I do? And I think that when you spend all your life or most of your time out there saying, did you know technology is 3 times worse than the planet than flying? Did you know that, you know, Taylor Swift's flights were 8,000 tons last year, but our Spotify was 800,000 tons, so it's 100 times worse. And people going, oh my God, I didn't know that. And it's like all kind of out there. It's, you know, even Rolling Stone magazine's writing about this stuff now, but it's in the public domain. But yet you're always telling people like the basic stuff, and rightly so. It's lovely to actually be in a room. So as I said, I was in a room last week, one of the digit conferences, where everyone kind of knew all that stuff already. So everyone was able to then have the next stage of conversation about, okay, then what do we do about it? That's probably the exciting bit, that there is enough people out there, both on the client side and, you know, on the supply side, you know, within vendors, who really are careful enough and thoughtful enough to be putting plans in place, starting to measure, starting to think about this stuff, starting to think about how they innovate in the space. So that's probably the most exciting thing. It's not, you know, it's very difficult to measure and to reduce in that space. And it doesn't even get down to code level. It really does sit higher up the food chain than that. But as people talk about it and people applying it to their supply chain, that's, you know, people starting to ask their vendors, you know, one of our had a very recent conversation with one of the kind of mid-tier CRM businesses. And they're like, oh, our biggest client just asked us what our scope 3 emissions are. We don't know. So bingo. Yeah. But that matters, yeah. Right? That client asking is driving the right behavior. And if more clients asked those big SaaS businesses, by the way, I need you to tell me what your scope 3 emissions are impacted on me, then the parameters were changed and you'd see a shift.
Again, you've touched on this a little bit, but you're giving us exactly what we want here, which is fantastic. How is it that you the balance that this sort of big picture thinking with the need to deliver practical and actionable solutions?
It's all about data, as is everything in life. the critical point is to start capturing the information which drives the measurement, which then drives the action. So for most of those people, it's understanding what are the critical data points, what's the measures that they need to understand in order to make better decisions. So both at a, what I would call like a CTO level or CIO level, where they have the overarching view of the entire ICT estate, and then recognizing how that data play through into their long-term decision-making. And it can be quite profound because it's not just about, oh, should we use hyperscaler A or hyperscaler B because one's slightly more efficient than the other. Going back to that kind of top level, if you take a critical look at your software, optimize it, your hardware will last longer. So you're looking, it changes your long-term, you know, kind of hardware buying strategy or relationships with vendors provide hardware. It can change your approach to your people strategy. One of the bigger impacts, if you look holistically at the delivery of digital products, you're looking at the people and their skills. You're looking at things like DevOps maturity, which super techie, but how you get stuff live, how you use those up, you know, how you use those tooling to accelerate your release process. All that delivers lower carbon outcomes. You look at your design processes, so your use of low code and no code. All those tend to deliver lower carbon, basically reduce, reuse, recycle. So if you reuse components, you reuse design elements, you're effectively reducing your impact. But even further up the chain, where your people live, where they work, where how far they commute, all contributes to the system. And if you look at those kind of bigger enterprises that are for a long time been migrating resources offshore, whatever your kind of feelings on that strategy, you have to put that aside, whether it's the right outcome for the business or not, from a financial perspective, in the short term, probably yes. In the long term, we've seen huge salary rises in lots of those territories and continued salary rises in those territories, but they're also much higher carbon. So per head, commutes are longer, the power comes from non-renewable sources, the grid intensity is higher. So you could be, from a financial perspective, solving a short-term problem. Actually, short-term, you're creating a much bigger impact on the overall carbon impact of your software. And then long-term, you're probably going to go realize that actually to reduce that and the carbon cost is becoming so high, we have to move it back again. So that it starts to become quite organizationally impactful higher up you kind of look at it all. And that all is all driven from that data. So we definitely see some organizations who are quite mature in this space and where they've already captured most of the data. It's a case of kind of corralling it into the right place. But for so many, that's just not something they've considered. And so much of the technology in big enterprise could be 20 years old, 30 years old. So trying to get to the bottom of where that data sits and lives is certainly tricky. But no, I think that is a fight, building data maturity so you can make better decisions long and short term about how you implement, how you build, how you design. That's the kind of concrete actions which come next, I think.
And then one last one before we move into our lovely quick fire round. How is it that you tailor your approach when it comes to working with different industries, say like between finance or sports?
I don't think we do. it's a funny thing, and I would talk about this when I was in the design, well, certainly still in the design world, but when I was doing experience design projects in the past, right? People are people, technology is technology. Largely, you know, you would say that every organization is unique, so you're tailoring things to the organization, not to the industry. I think it's probably the regulations which drive their reason for doing it can be different, depending on territory, depending on industry. But fundamentally, this is all about people. There's a whole bunch of cultural stuff in here about doing the right thing. And creating why my goal is whenever we're talking to businesses and organizations about thinking and about sustainability and design and technology is connecting that creation of that golden thread from an individual developer or designer to the emissions of the organization or the success of the organization. And I think you can do that now. And that's terrifically important that you can do that. And I think that's sector neutral, doesn't make a difference hugely. You want to be able to create a reason for someone to do the right thing. and sort of measurement, you can do that. I've made a better decision today, and that has will have an ongoing impact on my organization and its ability to get to net zero, which is great. So I really have to tailor things too much towards organizations. Of course, size plays a part. There are, you know, organizations, you know, the SMEs and fintechs and martechs and agritechs and all the rest of them. For them, it's a kind of one and done type thing. Here's one application, let's go measure it and do it. Whereas organizationally in both public sector and financial services, I think I'm always amazed at the number of applications that some of these big organizations have. I mean, thousands of applications. And when you have, so you have to take quite a big step back and say, okay, well, of those 2,000, 3,000 applications, we can't get into the fine detail with all of them. It's not possible. Where is the biggest opportunity to reduce? Where is the biggest opportunity to make a difference to your customers, your clients, your citizens? And how do we help them now with that focus? And then potentially aggregate that out, those decisions across a few applications. But we have huge technical debt in this country, in both in the private and public sector. We have to be able to just narrow focus on making the, you know, that kind of biggest impact we can.
Legos, and before that wraps up the sort of main body of questions that I have for you, and I'd say pass with flying colors. So we'll get straight to the quickfire questions. So what are three things that you couldn't live without, Gareth?
Three things I couldn't live without. My bike, my pizza oven, and my son. Probably the wrong order.
In no particular order. That's brilliant. And you've given a lot of really great advice over the past sort of half an hour or so. What is the best piece of advice that you yourself have ever been given?
Interesting. I come back to a piece of advice that was given by a former agency colleague. He was the chief exec of the agency I used for a long time when I was a client. I spent a lot of time. This isn't that quick fire. I'll be quick. I try and problem solve everything. I'm not quite bad for that because my brain works. I can fix this. I could fix that. I was trying to fix things that were beyond my control. And his advice was only try and fix the things that you have control over. It was very much about focus. You're far better delivering and changing and solving the problems that you can impact and make control of them than wasting time trying to influence things that you're not on the route for. So fix the things you can control.
Perfect. That's really sound advice. And that leads us to our last one. It's a very short round, but it's something we always ask everybody. And it is, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being the most, how weird are you, Gareth?
Weird am I? It probably depends on who you ask. If 10 weird and 0 is not weird, I'm 7.5. And only not 7 because 7 is the answer, but probably every game I can do that. I think you need a magic quadrant for weirdness rather than a score out of 10.
We need to review our system then.
That's the consultant in me.
As we close out another episode, make sure to like, subscribe, and follow us on our social channels. Want to access Label Sessions for your brand? Whether you want to build new products, access world-class mentors for your team, or reinvent the way you attract talent into your business, visit Label Sessions to find out more.